I'm Reggie.
And I'm Brian.
And this is R&B Talks.
R&B Talks.
Our usual edition. There's no specials or secondaries or tertiaries here.
Yeah. It's just us again.
A typical R&B Talks episode today.
Yes. Typicality, if that's a word. The typicality.
That lines up with our congruency.
Well, the fecundity of things is... I'm sorry. I love that word.
Fecundity.
You use the word fecundity. I can't even... I can't even fathom that you use that word almost.
I can't either.
It's fantastic. Yeah. It's fantastic. So, Reggie, how was your week?
Just freaking peachy, man.
Like the greatest ever?
Nah, it's just usual stuff. You know, nothing jaw-droppingly extravagant or anything like that.
It's hot.
It is hot here.
It's very hot. It's hot.
Yeah, I was outside today and it was trying to get some stuff done and it was like after a little while. Because, I mean, here when it gets to 98, 99, that's really hot for here. It's yeah. And so you're not used to it. So I'm out there and I'm working and I'm just like, it's just unreal.
You're sweating in every crack and crevice.
Yeah, oh, it's crazy. But I do that anyway, but that's not really any different. But you're just like, man, I am just really warm.
Miserable.
And so I'm, cause I did some bucking of some logs with the felling axe and then, and I was wore myself out with that. Then I'm like, well, I'd really need to get some weeding done. So I had the weed eater out and I'm doing all this and I'm going through my yard and I'm like, you know what? I'm done. I'm warm and I really don't want to be.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm sweating.
So I was at work.
That was funny.
And it was like being in an oven. I was being slow roasted. Nobody poked me with a fork to check me for tenderness, but I was being slow roasted. Mm-hmm. So, all right.
I have some dino beef ribs on the smoker.
Did you say dino beef ribs?
They call them everything about everything, but really they're plate ribs or just beef ribs, but they're the bigger ones that aren't like short ribs or anything. They're the full blown, you know, they're like, I don't know, foot long bones of meat and awesomeness. That's what I'm having tomorrow for my birthday.
How old are you going to be, Reggie? 35 for the 12th time.
I will be 47.
Ah, welcome to the late 40s. Welcome to the late 40s, Reggie.
I know.
I've been there a couple of years. They're kind of pleasant. Kind of pleasant, I got to say.
No, I mean, like, look.
Happy premature birthday, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. No, I mean, the whole thing about the – I really used to not, and we spoke about this before, but like even this week, I was kind of like, man, I just want to eat some things that I don't normally get to eat on my birthday that I love, right?
And that one of those would be dino ribs.
Well, I haven't smoked any of the like full blown beef ribs, ever. So I really wanted to do that anyway. They're expensive. Like if you have to go to certain places to get these things. So Porter Road is where I found them. So I finally got some of those. It's a special occasion. I got some hickory smoked sea salt and coarse ground pepper. And
I'm going to be bringing you back some lovely things from mine and my son's trip to Cleveland. They have an underground market there. And there's a lady there that craft makes Himalayan sea salts.
I don't know what that means.
Like she has, oh man, she had a lime citrus Himalayan sea salt. Oh my gosh, it was good. She had a smoked Himalayan sea salt. And she craft makes these herself. They're fantastic. And she also craft makes olive oil, which is her olive oils.
I think I read somewhere Himalayan sea salt actually wasn't that great. You're not supposed to use. It's got some impurities in it and stuff like that that you don't want. I can't remember where I read that from. I need to double check that though, because I totally could be telling you the wrong thing.
I don't know, man. I think
no, it was like
there was the preferred.
No, there was you think so, but there was something about where you get it or something or how they process it or there's something with it, dude. That you I don't know. I have to look that up. But anyway, yeah, that's cool.
Well, even olive oils aren't safe anymore.
No, it's all, they're all processed to the
gills. Well, because if you go to the grocery, according to the FDA, it only has to be 10% olive oil to be considered olive oil. So read your bottle, folks, because you might be getting 10% olive oil and 90% pea. I don't know what they put in there.
Not pea, dude.
It's possible, dude. Nowadays, the FDA will pass anything.
Well, anyway, so I know the ribs will be killer, dude. I got this. I forgot what place it was. I found this spice, a place that does all these spices, and like they're flipping unreal. They, this hickory smoked sea salt they have, it's pretty expensive, but dude, it is off the chain. It's so good. So, because I have like some beef rubs I put together, right, and mm-hmm. that I use on my briskets and stuff, but I have to do it all over again because of this hickory sea salt, because it's so good. I got to incorporate it. It has to be there. So
fair enough.
Oh, it's freaking so good, dude.
Have a concern, Reggie.
Yep, let's go.
So, for some reason this week, I decided to delve into some social media, some Instagram, to kind of take, you know, dip the finger, find the temperature of the water, right?
Okay.
Apparently, a lot of people, especially a lot of this younger generation, have a problem with my generation.
And when you say have a problem, what kind of a problem are we talking
about? Well, apparently they think that Gen X is the cause of all the problems in the world.
Yeah, we're the solution.
We're the last generation that has a connection between pre-technology and the technology explosion.
Yeah,
I remember when there were no cell phones and home computers were impossible for your parents to afford.
Yeah, we're it, dude.
And apparently Gen Z and millennials all seem to have a real issue with us.
See, I don't think that, and just around the people I hang around with.
Yeah, but I'm talking about out in the world.
I know, but see, that's the thing about, is it really how it is out in the world? You know what I'm saying?
I think it is a little bit.
Or is that just where it is in these like uber urban centers that are already jacked up anyway?
I don't know.
You know what I'm saying?
Because most like of people, these. I don't like people attacking my generation.
Well,
hose, water, and neglect, baby. Back up.
But there's like, you know,
that's why I had
all these places like these big media outlets come from like LA and New York, Chicago, all these big urban cities that are a freaking joke anyway. Yeah. So like what? I mean, it's pretty messed up there.
We're the last generation that will throw hands.
I don't know, man.
This current generation is throwing their phone.
Yeah, but see, my girls won't be like that. They're not like that, and they won't be like that.
What do you mean?
Because they don't
like the phone people.
Yeah, they're not. They don't. They're not going to have a phone for a long freaking time, and they don't. They are very restricted on how they use their technology and stuff. And yeah. And we do a lot of stuff manual. They don't. Yeah. So I mean, I don't think they're gonna. I think they're gonna be more like me than they are like the modern stuff. Now I'm a pretty techno guy, but
you are.
We'll see.
You're a techno dude, man. Like you're rocking it out. So I found a place you had talked on an episode. This has been a while back, but there's apparently a place where men can get beard and hair grooming near where we live, and I'm going to send that to you because you said you talked about getting your beard all like lined up and tightened up.
I did.
And I found a place, man, that's local and apparently has a really good reputation.
There's one in Gordon right over here. And I'm meaning to try it, but you know, so it's like, I am afraid. There's that.
Dude,
I
mean, dude,
I've worked on this thing.
Yeah, but honestly, Reggie. It's a little unwieldy.
It is unwieldy, but I like it.
Do you brush the beard? Yeah,
combed and brushed.
Do you use the brush oils? Do you brush the oils?
I don't know, dude.
And the waxes.
I tried some oils and all this stuff, and it just doesn't do a daggone thing. The only one I use is actually a friend of mine that made me some beard oil, and it's out of like some beeswax and cocoa and peppermint or something. It smells freaking like a Andes mint, you know?
Yeah.
And I'll use that every once in a while. And I like his better than anything else I've ever tried. So fair it's enough. Like,
fair
but, enough. But I don't do it very often because it's like I have kind of oily skin anyway and all that stuff. So I really don't need to make sure the oil, I really have to make sure it doesn't.
My problem is I'm a twice a day shower guy. So my skin's dry.
I bet it is.
Like my hands are like sandpaper. But I shower before I go to work because nobody wants to work around the funky guy. And then I work in a very dirty, dirty environment where there's a lot of dust and wood chips and such.
Then you have to.
And
so for me, that would be weird because like I don't. It's like I try to minimize my shower. How many times I shower. Otherwise, I would do like two or three times a day. Right. So I really kind of unintentionally don't do that. So I don't dry out anything because I'll have that happen. I'm doing so much outside anyway. Like I don't need an irritation from dry skin on top of that. Right. So I do limit my shower time, but there's a lot of times when it's twice a day. Hell, there's been several times where it's been three times a day.
Yeah.
Because it'd be like, you know, I wake up in the morning. I'm like, man, I really need something to get me going. So I pop in the shower for a minute to just nice like
cold, like 5 minute cold shower. Yeah,
just to like get invigorated a little bit, get out and then, you know, get dressed, do some work, go outside, do some stuff, then come back in, shower, then get ready to go. Well, then we have dinner and then I'll get into something else and I'll get showered like all sweaty and everything gross. And then it's into like, oh, okay, now I need another shower. I do that all the time.
Yeah. I try not to do three a day. I can say there's not been very often ever that I've done three a day.
It's rare, but I mean, it happens, dude.
But two a day is most days.
I have found my, this is probably totally not interesting to anybody that's watching this, but
okay.
Shower gel, dude. Like I went on this whole thing about trying to find like an absolutely natural, non-chemically shower gel. But it's like the ones you find that are so expensive. It's oh, like,
they are. Yeah.
And it's like, it's just like, I'm not one of those guys who wants to spend money on that kind of thing. Like I really don't, that's, I spend enough money on like all this other stuff that I don't need to spend. So it's almost like I had to find something that was like acceptable level of toxic.
Listen here, folks, I want you to know something. If you're a pipe smoker and you suddenly realize that there's no pipe tobacco, it's because Rezzy has it. If the apocalypse ever comes, he will definitely be able to smoke his pipe during it.
Here's the thing. I am not abnormal in the pipe community, bro.
I know, but that's abnormal in the normal human community.
Well, but I'm just saying, like, when you're into that, it doesn't, that's not a thing. I mean, it really isn't. Cause you're like, it really is. You're a collector and you like different things. Now there's some guys, dude, who only smoke like one particular blend.
Yeah.
And they only like one pipe. And they have like a bazillion of them, you know?
My grandfather had a cherry pipe. It was black stem, cherry wood. And the only thing he smoked was cherry tobacco.
Right.
And I used to just love the smell of that tobacco. Like it was so aromatic and it never was off-putting. It was so weird, right?
I have a couple. That's my problem. I don't like the flavored or sweetened tobaccos. I don't like them. I don't like they're sweeter. I like the really natural blends and stuff without all the like heavy toppings and stuff.
What I'm learning is very big in the cigar and tobacco world right now is bourbon blends.
Yeah, but no.
I'm not really sure, but apparently they're getting pretty popular amongst cigar smokers and pipe smokers.
Well, like they do. One in particular that I do like, I should say, is the Seattle Pipe Club. They put a bourbon barrel chunk in the container with it.
Yeah.
Right. So it kind of
very aromatic.
Well, no, it just adds a little something to it. That's really good.
Okay.
You know, stuff like that. But I don't like it when they actually put bourbon in my tobacco.
I'm currently smoking a cigar called a Punch. It's an Asian cigar. Punch is a brand. It's got a big Asian symbol on there.
Yeah, that's a Punch brand, but that's a particular cigar of theirs. But Punch is a good cigar brand.
It's very good. It's very nice. Okay, I'm still learning.
Here's what one thing, because we can't not talk about whatever it is, but I just want to say how I'm still flabbergasted by the amount of support that Kamala supposedly has. Can I just say that? I mean, that's really where I'm at. I just can't believe that there's that much support for this nonsense. Like, I understand Trump, why he wouldn't, like, why people would be anti-Trump. Like, I get it.
Yeah, I understand. I'm not a huge Trump fan.
I do. Myself. And when I watched that, the latest Sean Ryan and Trump interview,
yeah,
I didn't particularly. Good. But again, he said the same thing over. But that's what you have to do. I get it. I know. But man, he just calls everybody stupid. That's I think what's a
problem. Well, you know, I did watch his rally today, and he didn't. He didn't call anybody stupid. He called them communists and Marxists and all other kinds of things.
Yeah, but that's acceptable because that's what they are.
But I don't think he used the word stupid.
No, it just blows me. It blew me away, man. It was like constant. And I don't have, look, I know that's a bad word today. However, I think that's an idiotic thing, idiotic perception. Stupid's been a word we've been using for a long, long, long time in the English language. Who cares? I mean, it's like you.
Okay, I'm going to say something. There's a lot of words that have been kind of vilified because of, and I get it. I understand. If you use the word, and there's going to be some people that really throw some shade on me for this. If you use the word retarded.
Yeah.
People don't realize that that word has more than one meaning, you know. Retarded can also mean to
slow down
or pull away from something.
Yep.
Right. But we want to vilify words. You know, another one is, you know, words like homophobic or transphobic. Phobia is a fear. And then the context they use it in, well, you're being transphobic. So I'm being trans fearful. I don't know what that means. But this goes back to this whole societal thing we got going on right now where people are adapting words and changing the meaning to fit their narrative. And it's just nerve-wracking. Like, I would never call someone retarded. That's a terrible thing to call someone.
But see, I don't... Okay.
But I can use the word in ways that don't have that connotation, right? That don't have that connotation.
I just think we're you only give things... You are the one who gives things power over you. Let me say that.
Yeah.
Whether it's words or not. I mean, you decide how that affects you.
Yes.
Now, do I think that it's appropriate to use, you know, not offensive language? But again, that's all subjective. I mean, what's offensive to somebody else is not offensive to somebody else. I mean, it's just kind of like you got to kind of choose your offense here, really. And the more you be offended by things, kind of the worse you are, to be fair. I really think that comes out. Now, I think that I think this is a tool of the left is really the vilification of language and calling it hate speech and violence and all this nonsense. That's really come from the woke ideology too nowadays. Yeah,
for sure.
And we're both adamantly against that. But, you know, again, I think going back to this, I think just when somebody continues uses stupid to describe people or things or whatever all the time, it just gets old. And that's what not that I'm offended by it.
Just silly.
It's just dumb, right? It is stupid to say stupid too much.
Yeah, it is stupid to say. I don't know, man. I'm just, you get really scared about how to put language together anymore, right?
But I don't. And I'm saying probably Trump is thinking about some of that, but of course he's still like this guy. People have to understand Trump is still a guy who's a billionaire who really doesn't care what people think. He really does not. He doesn't have to do what he's doing at all. He can just go back to his billionaire life and be fine.
He's really not a viable resource for people.
No.
So it's very much difficult to corrupt him in certain ways.
Anyway, so I just find it. It's like every time I've asked somebody, why are you voting for Kamala? Well, I just don't. It's always in reference to Trump. It's like, you know, there's no. It's just,
dude, what? Who's been in charge for the last 3.5 years?
That's what I mean. Like, what are you just blind to, like, the last four, like you said, 3.5? Why? She realized she's been vice. Well, it's only vice president. What? That's the second highest office in the government.
Yeah.
Like, she's responsible for something. Now, granted, look, the people in general don't know how the presidential office or the vice presidential office works and what their powers are. But still, the it doesn't roll down. It, you know, the responsibility goes up. It doesn't, you know. So at the end of the day, if the country's not doing well, the appointees and everything that the administration, that includes Kamala Harris, has done, has led to where we are now.
Yeah.
Now, whether they're not doing everyday work in all this stuff, but they've appointed those people who are over that stuff.
Yes.
It's their fault. They're not firing those people and getting new people in. They haven't done that. As a matter of fact, they're just trying to hide everything.
Yeah, they're just trying. They're trying to hold on. They're trying to hold on to this tenuous strand of power that they have long enough to get past this and just to keep going.
But her whole thing is abortion.
Yeah.
Her whole platform right now is abortion or copying Trump.
Well, you know, I've had this conversation.
Yes, we have.
I'll have this conversation again.
I'm just flabbergasted. You know,
and this is just a common sense question. Okay. So of all the things we have to worry about right now, I listen, I get it. For people, abortion is an issue. And I understand it's an issue for them. I have issues that other people don't understand, right? With what I go through. But how many abortions will make our border secure? How many abortions will make our inflation stop? None. So, and there are no less abortions happening now than there were before Roe versus Wade was stopped. There's just the laws up to the states. So what exactly is the point of that conversation, right? What is the point of the whole Roe versus Wade abortion? It's still legal, right? Abortion is still legal.
Okay. So if you go to KamalaHarris.com, right?
Yeah.
Okay. They have not a single policy thing.
None at all.
Like there's nothing here. All what you do see is plenty of things to donate money to.
Yeah.
Okay. You're bombarded with that for you. But if you click menu, you got meet Tim Walz, meet Kamala Harris, take action store, donate. None of those say any policies.
Yep.
Nothing.
Shadow boxing, man. That's what she's doing. She's shadow boxing.
I just want to make that point. That's all. Because
I watched the highlights of her interview today. This was a recorded interview that she had time to prepare for. And she still sounded terrible. She still had word
just
salad. Seeing,
like, there's just,
like, I don't understand.
Look, anybody out there, if you have, because here's the deal. We are both intelligent people who look for facts and look for information. I want to know if I'm wrong. You want to know if you're wrong, Brian. If you have facts that says why Kamala Harris should be the president of the United States, why, like there's things that she's done, there's policies that she's aligned with, please let us know. Yeah. I would really like to know that I am wrong. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I would really love to know this.
I would really like to have a discussion with someone who says anyone but Trump that could actually give me current accomplishments of Kamala Harris. If you can, great. If you can show me something
without just saying her title.
Yeah, without emotional, without saying she was the DA in California and blah, blah, blah.
Say what she did.
Besides, tell me what she did. Give me policies. Give me principles. Give me the things that count. And if you can't give those to me, then don't start the conversation, right? Like, don't come at me with anybody but Trump when you can't give me a single reason to go in a different direction. But
the thing is, dude, another thing that I don't understand, and this is really true, and I don't want to harp on this too long because we got other shit to talk about, but
yeah.
Even the Democratic Party got completely railroaded, and then they didn't even get to choose like what they should be choosing through the voting process of who's actually going
to
run.
They want to save a democracy that they skirted in order to make this happen.
They did the same thing with the Trump trials and stuff, how they changed the whole freaking law in order to get the votes and all that, or the juror convictions and all that nonsense. I mean, this is not a sign that you are actually that you're not a tyrant. That's a sign you are. So anyway, look, all that aside, we really need to get into the topic of today.
Okay.
And that is, like, I get this question a lot. That where, like, if I say something about, like, a belief I have or something I'm not, I don't support, and it comes back to, well, what do you care? How does that affect you?
Yeah.
That, all the, it's constant, whether it be about, marriage or abortion, pro-life, pro-choice, or any number of things. Mm-hmm. Usually moral things are usually what it comes down to. Like, why would I be ever not support that because it doesn't affect me directly? But it does. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the whole point of this episode here is, like, how do things affect us that may be far away? How really are we all connected? That's what our topic is today, Brian.
Yes. This is a very deep topic as I began to study. It's another one of those that when you open up that rabbit hole, man, it goes a long way down.
It does.
But tell me, Reggie, how are we connected,
okay, sir? Here's the thing. This isn't even debated anymore that we are all connected. And even some propose on a quantum level, the entire humans that exist are connected. That's like, science is actually trying to find out the exact, like, specifications and methodologies and processes for it. But there is agreement that we are all okay. So in particular, there's a, what's his name? Tom Chi did a TEDx talk in Taiwan. And he said a couple of things that I really want to point out here because I think it helps to understand how we're all connected. But
yeah,
you know, the iron in our blood cells that we have, there's only, you know, it's being transported everywhere, but it's critical for our whole systems to work.
Okay.
The only way you get iron is from supernovas.
Okay.
So without these supernovas generating this iron and throwing it out in the universe, we would not have it in our bloodstream and we'd not have that. So we're all, and to kind of coin that, I guess it was Carl Sagan who said, you know, we're all made out of stardust. And then Neil deGrasse Tyson said something similar, or maybe got that backwards a bit, but you know, we're all star stuff. We're all made out of star stuff is what the kind okay. of the quote was, right? Well, that connects us all back to a place. Tom Chi also said, like, 3 billion years ago, which I would debate that strongly, but we had no complex multicellular life on Earth. It was impossible to do. The way our oxygen levels and nitrogen levels and CO2 levels were, it was not supportive of multicellular life forms.
Okay.
But what did exist was cyanobacteria.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular bacteria actually performed photosynthesis. So after billions of years, saturated the earth enough so that it built up the oxygen and formed the ozone layer.
Okay.
Okay. And then, so out of that, multicellular life was now possible because of the atmospheric changes from this bacteria and all this stuff. So then once we came about, we still share a relationship to not even just to ourselves, but like to the earth itself. Cause like, if you think about every breath we exhale is an intake to a plant of some sort, right?
Mm-hmm.
It all goes back to there. Then they exhale, then we breathe that in.
Yeah.
Well, if the way that's tied to each other, like if my breath directly impacts the oxygen levels of the whole ecosystem.
Yeah.
Now it's very small, but there's something that is taken away. Like if I no longer am breathing, if I'm no longer breathing in oxygen and exhaling CO2, I'm no longer contributing to the ecosystem in that way that affects everybody else.
Yeah.
That was kind of his whole point, is that we're all breathing in each other's air.
Okay.
We're all contributing to the ecology, right? So yeah. That was one of his points. I'll point out to another one that says from Gary McKee, independent interdependent universe, everything is connected. Link in the description. Perceptually, we are all experiencing the human condition individually, but actually we are all connected by the human condition interdependently. He goes on to say, the earth is a living system of which we are all an aspect. Human beings are fundamentally interconnected with the earth and with all its life forms. The boundaries we have set up between nature and the human soul are illusory at best and self-destructive at worst. Perceptually speaking, everything exists along an improbable line of probability. On a long enough timeline of probability, what's possible and what's impossible begin to merge. Perceptually, everything is separate and finite, but actually, everything is connected and infinite. It is this infinite connection, despite our limited finite perceptions, that makes us one with the cosmos.
Okay.
So, in other words...
That's some deep right there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, we don't have time to dig into the specifics of like the because there's been lots of research into the consciousness and actually all that kind of stuff and whatever the case may be. But let's just nail down this point here, and I'll say this: this is a big one with how we're all connected. Okay, this is from Quantum Mechanics Reveals How We're All Truly Connected. So here's. Here's a statement from that article by L.R. Bourbon, I guess. Okay. Senior scientist at Princeton University, Dr. Roger Nelson, began a 14-year-long study in an organization called the Global Consciousness Project, GCP. The GCP uses electromagnetically shielded computers called eggs placed in over 60 countries around the world that generate random numbers. Okay.
Okay.
So imagine that each computer is flipping a coin and trying to guess the outcome, with heads being counted as ones and tails as zeros. Each time they guess correctly, they consider it a hit. The computers do this 100 times every second.
Okay.
Okay. Based on probability, you would imagine that with enough attempts, the computers would break even at 50-50. Okay. And up until the catastrophic and rattling events of 9/11, that's what was occurring. Randomness created by quantum physics to the best of its ability. It was random all up until 9/11. Okay. 50-50. Ones and zeros. 50-50. Okay. After 9/11, the numbers that were once supposed to behave randomly started working in unison.
Uh-huh.
All of a sudden, the ones and zeros were coinciding and working in sync. In fact, GCP's results were so far above chance, it's actually kind of shocking.
Okay.
So somehow after 9/11, because we were all in you more united, that changed the fabric of consciousness that even affected these random computer generating numbers.
Fair enough.
Right?
Yes.
That's wow. That's insane. I just want everybody to understand this. Like 60 countries, all these computers generating random numbers. 50-50 up until 9/11. After 9/11, all of a sudden, it was shocking the amount of unity that happened between all these computers.
Fair enough.
Now, if that doesn't unveil like how much we are connected at a quantum level, I really don't know what.
Well, I mean, then that brings the question: do the things that we do affect not only the others around us, but the unseen others around us? Do you know what I mean? Like, if a house was to burn down, you might lose all your possessions. You may have to start all over. But does that affect the people around you? Well, sure it does. It affects you in a microeconomic way. It affects you in so many other ways as well. I mean... Okay, so you have a healthy neighborhood, house burns down, now you have a burnout house, now you have less, the property values drop around you. All these things happen, you know, and my stance on this is, it's the reason why I'm really big on try to be kind to people, because what you give is what you'll get. And I think that that's because it will cycle back to you. Coworkers, you know, neighbors. You talk a lot about being a service to your community. That's a ripple effect into your community, right? That's going to go, it's going to spread. You know, it's going to inspire others to do the same thing and cause more of those positive ripples to spread. But I think this thing, this current attitude that our society has is, well, if it's what I do in my own behind closed doors, it's not going to affect anybody. But it is. I'll give you an example. Children, your kids are going to carry what goes on in your house to the outside of your house, right?
And so are you.
And so, well, but I mean, what I'm saying is a ripple effect beyond yourself. Like if you have children and you show poor examples of relationships, that ripple effect is going to go to them and they're going to show poor examples of relationships. Like this whole idea that what I do doesn't affect other people. It actually does. What you say actually does. Right. And none of us are above it. We've all said dumb stuff before. And then afterwards you're like, man, I probably wasn't the greatest thing for me to say.
This goes back to the ecologies of faith thing we did too. I mean, when we explored how all these different systems and subsystems and like that were ecologies that were all connected and played into each other.
Yeah.
And it's God's plan to be that way. And so, I mean, it's very clear that you might say, well, okay, we're all connected. What someone does may or may not, You may feel that, you may not feel that, but it still affects you. How does it affect you? At what extent does it affect you? Now, I tried to find some quantitative, like real answers here, and I really didn't find anything that was worth using as a reliable citation here. What I'll say is that I think we have to look at societies and civilizations over the course of human history. And we can see that when the civilizations and societies functioned in a certain particular way, they were far more successful than others, right?
Yeah.
If the society promoted certain characteristics, they did better than others who didn't, right? Yeah. So I don't, that's so much to like, unwrap. We don't have time to do that today. But just know that like the more free the people are, the more, and really I'll quantify it this way, that it's like the more the society mirrored the more Western democratic systems, the better they did. The more the power structure was less pointed and the more it was distributed, was they did better.
Yeah.
Right. All these factors really indicate that like what you promote and what you do and allow and how your culture is does affect everything in that particular society or civilization. So it's important I may, and frankly, I don't want to know or have a direct like feeling of what's going on in my neighbor's bedroom.
No,
but it does affect everything that happens in our world, our ecosystems, in our societies, in our communities. It there is an effect there of how we're promoting and what we're doing. So let's say, here's what I thought of, Brian. Let's say in an extreme case, let's just say that we are, and I got this from, I don't forgot what Star Trek ripoff show that was, but the culture says we're only going to allow a certain, there's no longer two genders, only one. And you're going to start doing that. What's going to happen to the civilization?
Well, it's probably going to deteriorate and vanish.
It has to, because you're no longer having.
Well, it's like, a species that cannot reproduce itself is doomed to extinction. So if everybody's the same gender and there's no man or woman or you know, and there's no, you're basically saying, well, you are what you are and you can't change. So yeah, you're just going to spiral to nothing.
But also too, you're actually contributing to a, you're trying to lessen the diversity of the gene pool, basically.
Yeah.
So you're kind of being racist.
Yeah.
really there, but think about it. Right. So if you keep promoting, and I'm not saying like, let's say you lab grow and a fictional example of this is what you saw in Man of Steel. Like when, his dad was arguing with the council or whatever about how, and they had been growing they just lab grow their own people and for a specific task and all that stuff. Yes. But it had negatively impacted their society and it was crumbling. Not because they didn't have any kids anymore, but because they were not, it wasn't random. It wasn't diverse. It was specially created individuals now. Right.
Yeah.
And that created this whole thing. Now, not to say that, look, that's sci-fi. So, I mean, you know, that could be registered as such, but I think it bodes well to just pose that for a realistic, you know, aspiration for a certain, set of beliefs to say like, well, just whatever goes, it affects society. It affects, and you might not feel that today, but your children,
yes,
their children will definitely have a, yes, direct relationship with that. So that's what I mean. Like that's kind of how all of this is really, it is important and it does affect me.
Yes, it does.
So here's what I would say, Brian, like for you, if you look at culture,
mm-hmm,
and how culture is defined, what makes you look at that and go, the level of which you're going to combat or agree with a certain cultural practice,
whether it's based in fact or not.
Okay.
I am a notorious, I don't care about your feelings guy. I want facts. Right. And I am going to rail against things and be against things that are not factual. I identify as a dog. You know, you're just not being very smart. You're not a dog. You're a human, right? Like, I can't do those things. I will. But because, I mean, if you take a look at our society, if we're talking about a ripple effect, this whole situation we're in with the pronouns and the, I'm a him, the, they, with
a fur thing or with whatever,
furry tendencies. And that's an out of control ripple effect that is making its way through our society, because there is a social contagion to this. You can say what you want, but the ripple effect you're seeing is the social contagion that is spreading throughout our younger generations, right? Another one is this lack of communication. You know, if you're in the same house as someone, you don't need to text them. Get up and go talk to them.
Well,
right. There's this whole just mess, this untidy mess that's happening right now that doesn't make any sense. And again, I'm not against anyone. Like, look, dude, if you want to wear dog ears and a dog tail and eat out of a bowl, okay, well, that's your thing.
But
I'm not going to call you a dog. I'm not going to treat you like a dog. I'm not going to pet you and say good boy or good girl. I'm going to be like, that's a dude dressed like a dog, or that's a chick dressed like a dog.
I mean, I think this is what,
you know,
we got to ground ourselves in reality.
Exactly.
All right.
And the reality of that situation is that person is suffering from a mental illness.
You're right. And that will affect the society, the people around that person or whatever. That has an effect on the society in general.
Chloe Cole is a perfect example. Chloe Cole was societally pressured into mutilating her body before her mind had fully developed. And now she is living with the ripple effects of those decisions that were pressed on her and she was convinced to take, and the fact that her parents just rode right along And that's going to ripple through her life. Generationally, there won't be another generation of Chloe Cole because.
Right. They've done so much damage.
They've done so much damage. It will never happen. So yeah, there's a ripple effect there. There was generation, possible generations of unique life that would have made a contribution to society. Maybe just been a good mom or dad, you know, maybe been a great example of a family person that was completely eliminated due to the ripple effect of what was done to her.
And I think some of the science I was reading about and theories around consciousness, connectiveness, mm-hmm. lend itself either to a big part of this as well.
Yeah.
And so to that story about the whole project there, unity and distortions and disruptions of that stuff actually can be felt as indicative of what these scientific studies were coming from.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like if someone's having a mental problem,
mental crisis,
and it's not getting acknowledged or treated, and there is a ripple, according to some of these theories and stuff, that's their consciousness is screaming out to the freaking, you know, to the, everybody else saying, hey, I got a problem.
Yeah.
I mean,
unfortunately, in our vast medical field that has developed inside the United States, which I say that with a little bit of a chuckle because I have done deep dive studies into our current medical field, which have quite frankly frightened
me. Agenda-driven research?
Yeah.
Yeah. And pharmaceutical-pushed stuff?
Yes. And
for profit?
And keeping people sick for the purpose of making money, yep. Essentially, is what it's about. But we have literally ignored this crisis, this mental health crisis that's going on. And instead of doing what we should do, which was to stand up and go, all right, there's this incredible mental health crisis going on right now. Instead of doing that, we've chosen to take a stance of acceptance of the preposterous, right? It is preposterous that you are an animal. It is preposterous that you can become something you're not.
Yes.
On a cellular level, on a DNA level, you cannot become that. You might act that way. You might dress that way, but that does not make you something that you're not.
Well,
right. So, and again, look, man, I'm not throwing shade on anybody. I get it. The world is a jacked up place and it is a very hard place to live in.
Here's where I think me and you both align with this.
Yeah.
It's not that I think ill of you that I would say these things.
Yeah.
It's that I think you need help. And I think you have a problem that needs to be addressed accordingly.
Another way of saying it is because of my call to Christ, I love you as a brother
yes.
and sister in Christ. And I see you struggling and I see you turning to answers that are not really answers.
They're demonic.
Well, not even that's true, but not even that. You're listening to those who would lie to you and tell you, no, that's not a problem. That just makes you unique. Mental illness does not make you unique.
No,
it means that you have a sickness, that you have an imbalance in your brain
yeah.
that needs to be treated. And let's not even go into all the research that goes into the effects of movement and all that stuff. But there is a very, and here's something really, another ripple effect. I believe that a lot of this has come from the mental instability created by our dependence on digital media, on social media, and our complete rejection of a healthy form of life all the way around.
Well, true. There we could have a whole debate about that, yeah. really. Well, not debate, but we would agree.
But ripple effect, right?
See, here's one thing I'll throw out here. I think everybody's been in these situations before where, like, you walk into a room and it feels stressful.
Yeah. Cuts tension with a knife. Yeah.
Yeah. Where does that come from? If things weren't connected and you could, then why would you feel anything at that point? Okay.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Like if you, I've been into some, as a musician, been in some pretty weird situations.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this feels weird. This is, something's off.
Yeah. Something's not, something may happen in the right way.
Yeah. And you could say that, well, that's you looking at micro inflections of this or that or whatever, but that's a theory too. It's a thing. There's a vibe, right? Mm-hmm. That's why we have these words, vibe, and like, you know, that kind of stuff. But look, there's clear that flows out of everything. And there's a lot of, especially if you talk about some of the, other religions like Taoism and Buddhism and stuff like that, there's very much a connection between all the energy that flows around everything and blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, I think anywhere you look, you'll find that what someone does, no matter if it's right next door or if it's across the country, affects everybody else. That is, you know, it may not be as a full-fledged, you know, you'll wake up tomorrow and something will happen, yeah. But it does affect everybody around them and around them and around them. It just flows out from there. So when we look at stuff and they say, well, how does that affect you? It affects our society and it affects our culture and it affects it affects our standing in the world as other cultures look at us either as idiots or not, kind of stuff. If it affects how we grow and raise up our families and stuff in a positive environment or in a contentious environment or whatever the case may be. But look, it affects you, period. Absolutely. And the Bible calls us to not to like condemn anybody, but we are supposed to be the light in the dark.
Yeah.
So I am supposed to promote and advise towards the biblical way of life. And look, we can have I'd welcome anybody who wants to have an argument about Leviticus and all that stuff. Let's go. But you all haven't piped up, so you don't get that today. But the whole thing is we are connected far beyond what we think we are. And even people say even quantum entanglement has a lot to do, but it has something to do with all this stuff too.
Very much so.
Okay. Now, one other thing I just want to point out that, like, when I thought about this, I also thought about, like, well, somebody asking me that question hasn't thought about why we have laws or rules for our societies. Like, if truly we weren't connected at all and it didn't matter what someone else did, then what would it matter if we needed to have, say, you can't be naked running down the street or, you know, you can't... You got to be this age in order to drink and you got to do that. Why wouldn't we just say, well, it doesn't affect me. So who cares?
Fair enough. Well, rule of law is made to help us control, right? Like to help us from having ripple effects. Let's take, here's an example. City has a low crime rate. Criminal comes in, commits crimes, gets away with a crime. Other criminals get word, they move into that city. They start to commit crimes. The next thing you know, you're out of balance.
Yep.
So the rule of law is to keep that balance from shifting, right? Because the ripple effect is now our city's crime ridden. Businesses are closing. People are moving away. San Francisco, Los Angeles, those would be great examples of towns that are suffering from the ripple effect of crime and vagrancy and all the things that are going on there that they have just let to become rampant. Well, awesome. You know, that's a prime example. The rule of law is not only a good idea, it's absolutely and 100% necessary.
Laws are the rules that regulate conduct and behavior within society. That's what exactly. That's from the UK. Value of law, purpose of laws and legal systems, right? In the UK, especially, if we go back to like the era of like the Magna Carta, mm-hmm. I mean, that was a huge thing for Europe at the time. Like that created a whole different kind of system than what is this that was before. The rule of law for that particular time period established a functioning justice system. accountable and transparent governments and public institutions. Yes. Not so much today. A health, democracy, and political economy, fair trials, open and transparent lawmaking, yada, yada, yada. But what according to the World Justice Project, the rule of law correlates to higher economic growth, greater peace, less inequality, improved health and well-being outcomes, and more education. Okay. The American Bar Association, though, adds to that, in my opinion, saying no country can maintain a rule of law society if its people do not respect the laws. Everyone must make a commitment to respect laws, legal authorities, legal signage, and signals in courts. So it's up to us to dictate how much we actually follow the laws or whatever. And it's also up to us how we form and promote certain values in our culture. So, I mean, I guess where all this is going to is just that I think people need to lighten up with this. How does this really affect you nonsense? It just doesn't make any sense. It scientifically doesn't make any sense, nor does it make any sense psychologically or physiologically or philosophically. It doesn't.
Doesn't.
Here's some Bible verses, because this is very much a God-centered connectiveness is part of the biblical meta-narrative.
Yes.
For just as we have many members in one body and all the members do not have the same function, so we who are many are one body in Christ and individually members one of another. Romans 12, 4 through 5.
And what does it talk about? If one part of the body gets sick, the rest of the body is contaminated.
Being diligent to preserve the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace, there is one body, one Spirit, just as also you were called in one hope of your calling. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one Father, and Father of all who is over all and through all and in all. Ephesians 4, 3 through 6. So you notice this theme here. There's one. It's a unified body of the church. Unified, well, even the Trinity. The Trinity is one person in three distinct functions, right? They all are in unity, right? But there's still three individuals that are compromising this one body, completely in unity, okay? When he first created Adam and Eve, there was complete unity, connectiveness. Everything was completely one. And that's true here. For even as the body is one and yet it has many members, and all the members of the body through they are many, are one body, so also is Christ. In other words, it's the same thing as they were saying in Romans, 1 Corinthians 12, 12. Paul repeated that a couple times, and I think that's it's definitely a biblical concept that is we are all connected, not just between us, but to the Father. So as connected as we all are, we're also connected to them through the Father.
Very true.
Yep. All right, Brian. Anything else you might add to the topic of how things affect you? Right now, I think there's a melatonin levels have risen.
It have. Not really. Not really. I'm actually feeling pretty good. Here's what I would say. If I was to encourage anything to help re-strengthen the connectivity of our actions, it would be to try to get people to understand that your actions have power.
Yeah.
Recognize that your actions have power and act accordingly. Right? Recognize that. Yes, it might feel good to say or do this thing right now, but what will happen if I do? Who will get hurt? Who will fall?
I think even if you don't know those answers.
But what I'm saying is,
to understand there is one.
To understand that there is an answer to that.
Yeah.
And it could be a positive or a negative. And craft your response according to that thought process, right? This thought, this single-mindedness that we have or that our society has developed is so bad because it disregards the need for us to live societally together and get along and encourage one another, right? And that's what we're here to do, is encourage one another. We can do that in 100 different ways. But the first thing I would tell you is, you know, mitigate your actions with that thought. Yeah, it might feel good to say this right now, but what will be the ripple effect of me saying this? Will there be a ripple? Actually, just ask, could something happen? If the answer is yes, then you probably ought to take a different tact.
Not just that. Like, just think about it, even your breath has an impact on the ecosystem.
That's right.
I mean, it doesn't matter how emotionally connected you are to something or somebody. Even your breath has an impact on the whole ecology of the earth.
That's right.
I mean, that's a pretty substantial thing to think about, right?
And I would encourage you, you know, and I put this challenge out about 2 years ago. Intentionally encourage people. Intentionally love people. Intentionally, you know, try to forgive people. And if you do that for a while, it will become your second nature. I'm not saying be a doormat and be walked on. But it is so amazing what a simple gesture of kindness, word of encouragement. We talked about energy in the room, how much you can change it with just a simple gesture that pushes for a positive ripple effect.
I mean, you always look at those places you've walked into where you just felt good.
Yeah.
Any number of things, man. It could be just a family gathering that everybody was in a great mood.
I'll be honest. My in-law's house. When you walk in their house, it's just peaceful.
Right.
It's just a great place to be. It's so, and I strive to want to provide that kind of environment. And I know it takes years of work and encouragement, but when I go in their house, I feel supported. I feel loved. I feel encouraged. I feel accepted and I feel heard when I'm in that area. And
I know. Just,
and it's such a good feeling. I wish other people could have it.
Like, you know, it's like great example. I'm in sales, but I don't do sales work. I'm in the delivery of the solutions and stuff.
Yeah.
When you go to like a sales event where they have the top performance go, there's also an atmosphere there of that. It's like oozing of success.
Yeah.
And it's not, there's nothing that anybody's doing at the moment.
Yeah.
But it's because of that. That's what has been cultivated at this, that these people now come together, have this, like, it's just a vibe. It's like,
I gotta say, you used the word oozing.
I did.
A fecundity of oozing.
We are R&B Talks.
Guys, like, comment, subscribe. But most of all, go out and make a positive ripple effect in the world.
And don't listen to anybody who tells you that how does it affect you. That's just a silly argument that is misunderstood.
It's a circular argument that goes nowhere.
It doesn't. And it, you know, the simple answer is, like, if we're all connected, then whatever anybody else does, it does. Now, does that mean it's of strategic importance to you? No. But does that mean that you should promote and do those values that you espouse as being, you know, the most positive for your family and others? Yeah.
You know, and so, even look forward in your work environment. I work for a great company who is always espousing positivity. It's shocking to me at times, because I've worked for some companies that you feel beat down by, but the current company I work for does a great job at really making you feel connected and making you feel like you're part of a team. And that's whether you're home, that's whether you're at work, that's whether you're with friends. You should always be striving for that.
Yeah. Thanks, folks.
We're R&B Talks. See ya.
Bye-bye.